श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि गो। सो गुड इवनिंग टू ऑल ऑफ यू, प्रणाम, थैंक्स सो मच फॉर योर काइंड इनविटेशन। इट्स माय प्लेजर, गुड फॉर्चून, ऑनर टू बी हियर इन द एसोसिएशन ऑफ द वैष्णव ऑल ऑफ यू। So today, as Navarasa Prabhu have mentioned, there is an invitation to speak on the topic of priorities in Grihastha life. And as Navarasa Prabhu very accurately pointed, in one sense, I'm nobody to speak about that because I have basically zero experience of what does it mean to be a Grihastha or to have a partner, at least in this lifetime. I have not gone through that experience, just it was Brahmacharya Ashram, Sannyasa Ashram, and here I am. But in one sense, I have lots of what we may call vicarious experience by trying to advise and give support to many devotees throughout the last two decades and more in their dynamics and of Grihastha life. And of course, as Navarasa also pointed, through the study of Shastra, we receive very important points that apply to Grihastha Ashram and to other ashrams as well. I wanted to concentrate in that direction today. So to begin with, when we speak about Grihastha again, I like to always connect the idea of Grihastha to the notion of ashram, because sometimes that may be overlooked. We have Brahmacharya Ashram, Sannyasa Ashram, but Grihastha is also an ashram. And the word ashram is intimately connected with the idea of ashraya. And ashraya means shelter. So Grihastha ashram means a choice in life that it is supposed to be a shelter for me. I'm choosing that that lifestyle, if you will, so that can shelter me. I'm entering into a shelter. We of course may have heard different statements in Shastra speaking about family life as a dark well, and so on. But those statements are not speaking about Grihastha ashram. Those statements are speaking about family life outside shelter, outside the idea of ashraya or ashram. In that case, we have a well. But if Krishna is there, if the center is the pleasure of Guru Vaishnavas, then we have to speak in another terms, and those are ashram. So for me, it's a very important thing to emphasize. It's never enough how much we can emphasize that. Family life is not necessarily a dark well. I mean, it has the potential to become a dark well, as monastic life can become a dark well also. You can be a sannyasi and be totally entangled with followers, money, pratishta, and it became a dark well. You are out of the ashraya. You get out of the shelter. But if you properly understand what's the meaning of each one of these basically ashrams, you understand all this is supposed to give me shelter, to increase my taking shelter of Krishna. I'm entering the Grihastha ashram so I can increase my idea of Mamekam Sharanam Braja, Sarvadharmam Pargityaja, what Krishna is saying in the Gita. Surrender to me. So it's not that I accept family life to not surrender to Krishna or to surrender less to Krishna. No. I according to my particular nature and situation, I think that's the best choice in this moment in my life to increase my surrender to Krishna. No? So Grihastha life is not an excuse to not surrender to Krishna, but it's a conscious choice to increase my surrender, my shelter in Krishna, to increase my ashraya, my shelter, my sense of shelter. So for Mahaprabhu, we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, so we are under the shelter of Sriman Mahaprabhu. He's the Ishtadev of our Sampradaya. We belong to the Gaudiya Sampradaya, so Mahaprabhu is its presiding deity, if you will. And Mahaprabhu himself, although he belonged, in his lila on earth, he was a Grihastha for some time, then he accepted sannyas, as you know. But interestingly, one of the few statements that are ascribed directly to Mahaprabhu, we only have the Sikshastakam We have a few other verses that our Goswamis have ascribed. This was spoken by Mahaprabhu himself. There's one verse that appears in Bhakti Sandarbha, Shrotanapi Upanishadam, Dure Hare Katamrita, and so on. And there's another verse which is quite well known for those who, for example, engage in Archana, in the moment of Bhuta Suddhi. You know the verse? So it says, Naham vipruna chanara patirna pivaishana sudro, naham varnina cha griha patirna vanastuja tirva, kintu prodhyam nikila paramanandam purnamritabdher, gopi bharatu padakamalayor, dasa dasa anodas. Thank you so much. So in that famous verse, Mahaprabhu is saying, what? I am not a Brahmin. He was a Brahmin, technically speaking. So the verse starts saying, Naham bipro. Na, not, aham, me, bipro. Brahmin. I'm not Brahmin. But he was a Brahmin. Then he says, and so on. He will say, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Sudra, I'm not a Brahmacharya, I'm not a Grihastha, I'm not Vanaprastha. At that time he was sannyasi, but he said, Yatirba. I'm not sannyasi. So what's the meaning of this? Because outwardly, he was a Brahmin, he was sannyasi, but he was saying, I'm not those things. And he included all the other varnas and ashrams in that equation. So basically, in one sense, Mahaprabhu denied all of them, or at the same time, he mentioned, he put all of them on the same level, if you will, by saying no to all those things. Of course, he said, my real identity, my real self is servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Krishna, the beloved of the gopis, in brief. So, whether you are, the idea of the verse is, whether you are grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, this or that, all that has to be there to help you to identify yourself as gopi bhartu padakamalayor dasa dasa no das. So, you choose to be a grihastha so you can increase your dasatva, your sense of servitorship towards Hari. You become a sannyasi exactly for the same idea. In one sense, so all of you, some of you or most of you may be in the grihastha ashram. I may be the only weird one in the sannyasa ashram here. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we are all together in the same purpose. I mean, hopefully each one chose their particular ashram with the same idea. Now, I know that this situation in life will be a very healthy platform so I can give myself to Krishna in the best possible way. If I accept sannyas, for some of you, accepting sannyas will be disturbing to serve Krishna. For some of us, accepting grihastha ashram may be disturbing to serve Krishna. So we are trying to be intelligent and think, what's the best adjustment I can make now so I can increase my dasa, dasa, anudas. So in that sense, Mahaprabhu is saying, in one sense, it doesn't matter if you are grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, brahmachari, sudra, whatever. As long as you are identifying as a servant of Krishna, you are on the right page, if you will. Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, Grihe Thako, Vane Thako, Sadahari Boli Thako. No. Whether you are at home or you are in the forest, which means basically whether you are a grihastha, Grihe Thako, or you are a sannyasi or vanaprastha, Sadahari Boli Thako. No. You constantly chant the name of Hari, implying, in one sense, it doesn't matter house or forest, as long as you are engaging in Kirtaniya Sadahari, constant glorifications of Hari. So the idea is that Krishna Bhakti, Krishna consciousness, is not limited by Varnashram. Varnashram is some adjustment or choice we will make in this life, in this world, so we can properly engage in Krishna Bhakti. But it's not that if you are in one position of the Varnashram or in other, you are better devotee or something like that. It's not like that. It's not that because I am a sannyasi, I'm better than you. I'm better devoted than you. There are two different things. Do you follow? One thing is where you locate yourself in society according to your nature. Another thing is where you are internally in your devotion to Krishna. We have the stories of so many great devotees who are not renunciants. I mean, many of the eternal associates of Mahaprabhu, as we will mention. So do not think, for example, that I'm not living in a temple, so I'm less of a bhakta than those who live in the temple. Not necessarily. Why? Because ideally your house has to be a temple. So in that sense, you are not living outside the temple. It all depends which is your consciousness. If you see the house as my house, okay, then you are not in the temple. But when you realize this is not my house, this idea of my mine, I me mine, aham mameti, it's not favorable for my bhakti. This is an ashram, this is Mandir. Thakurji is the owner here. I'm just taking care of his property. My family is not my family. I'm not projecting this sense of possessiveness, but they are Vaishnavis, and Krishna is putting them in my life so I can serve them. So you change the angle of vision, basically, which is not so easy. But once I remember someone asked my Param Gurudev, Srila Bhakti Rakshak Siddhartha Goswami Maharaj, when they both approached him and said, Guru Maharaj, can you give me some seva? And this devotee was very naive, very like innocent. So he was thinking, maybe he will tell me, go and wash the pots, go and, I don't know, cook some chapati for lunch or something. But Srila Siddhartha Maharaj gave him service for the rest of his life. So he said, Guru Maharaj, can you give me some seva? And Srila Siddhartha Maharaj said, yes. The seva I'm giving you is change your angle of vision. That's my seva. Try to adjust the way you look at things. That's a whole service that a guru is giving you. Like this example, if you are in your house, no, change your angle of vision. This is the mandir of Sri Thakurji. No. I'm saying, this is my family, change your angle of vision. There are Vaishnavs whom I can render service to. You follow. Externally, the situation is the same, but we have to change our angle of vision. And of course, for that, we need to practice on a daily basis. We need good association. It's not just, okay, I'll change my angle of vision. It's not you press a button and everything is magical. But it's daily work, daily job, basically. But the point is, yeah, we should not feel discouraged, like, I'm living at home, I cannot be as devotional as someone who is living somewhere else, because again, your house can be a temple, your house should be an ashram. It's not that we are going to the temple. Maybe we can think, I'm going from one temple to another. No, my house is a temple, I'm going to the Brahmacharis temple, and then I'm returning to one Grihastha's temple. So that's ideal. Do not ever think like Grihastha ashram is something wrong or inferior. Because technically speaking, as I like to say, our eternal prospect in eternity is in the Grihastha ashram. Now, if you want to enter Golok Vrindavan and serve Krishna there, you won't be Brahmachari in Golok Vrindavan. You won't be a sannyasi in Golok Vrindavan. You will be Gopi or Gopa. And there is family life, Grihastha ashram in every single house, basically. So that's an important point. If you are a sannyasi or a brahmachari, be careful with becoming too much attached to that, because in your ultimate goal, you won't be a sannyasi in Golok Vrindavan. You follow my point? There will be Grihastha ashram in the Leela, basically. And this is the idea that we are managing. No? The inhabitants of Golok are not thinking we have to become monks, we have to leave home. No? When Nanda Maharaj was kidnapped by Varuna's agents and Krishna rescued him, and eventually all the Brajavasis hear about the situation and ask Krishna, please, you are a very special person, show us our next life. So Krishna showed them, I'm making a long story short, and Krishna basically said to the Brajavasis, close your eyes, and now open your eyes, and here is your next life. And what did the Brajavasis see? They saw exactly the same thing, situation they were at that moment in Vrindavan. They saw themselves, the cows, the house, Vrindavan. It's like if Krishna put like a mirror in front of them. This is your next life. Exactly what is going on now, that will be their next life. And they were great. No, it's happy. It's the best thing that can happen. They were not thinking, we would like to abandon all this. You follow? So they have their house, their family, their cows, and so on, but all with Krishna in the center. And for them, that's the best possible thing for eternity, forever, basically. So now in this lifetime, we as sadhakas, as practitioners, we are preparing ourselves for entering that abode. Golok Vrindavan, Golok Navadvip. So it's important that somehow we live our lives here in such a way that eventually it will match the abode we want to enter for eternity. It's not that we are living here one type of life that is totally disconnected and suddenly we will be thrown to Golok Vrindavan. It won't happen like that. We have to enter into that consciousness more and more to the point that that state of consciousness corresponds with that abode, and we will enter there. So that's a standard idea we find in the Brajavasis. And since we invoke the Brajavasis, I would like to share a few verses that are quite connected to this idea from the Brahma Stuti, a section, very important section in the Bhagavatam, chapter 14, 10th canto, where Brahma is praying after the famous Brahma Vimohan Lila, when Krishna expands himself, you know the story, and Brahma becomes totally overwhelmed. His foreheads are spinning, totally astonished. What's going on? Krishna expanded like the calves and the friends, and then he showed forms of Narayan coming from each one of those forms and Brahmas. And suddenly all those forms disappeared, and Krishna was like looking for his friends again with a little bit of rice and yogurt in his hand, and Brahma was like, what's going on here? It's totally overwhelmed. And he started to offer prayers. So this is Brahma Stuti, chapter 14 of 10th canto. So almost at the conclusion of these prayers, the first prayers are all about our Siddhanta, all the philosophical foundation of our lineage. But the last prayers, Brahma starts to glorify the Brajavasis. Even he prays to be born among some species in Vrindavan, something. And he starts to glorify the fortune of the Brajavasis, the love of the Brajavasis. And eventually in I want to share verses 35 and especially verse 36 of this series. There are 40 verses, praise by Brahma. So in the last part of verse 35, Brahma is saying to Krishna, I don't know how you will reciprocate to the Brajavasis because they have given everything they have to you. Jat dharmartha, they say suhrit, priyatman tanaya pranayasas takriti. Basically that means their homes, their wealth, their friends, their relationships, their bodies, their children, and their very lives and hearts are all dedicated to you. So that's a very nice point, because he's not saying they accepted sannyas and they had nothing and live in the cave. They have cows, wealth, house, family, kids. It's not an impediment. But they have offered all that to you. They have offered their very hearts and lives. So that allows them to offer everything else around them. So that's a very important connection in this idea of priorities in Grihastha life. Because again, the priority in Grihastha life is the same priority in Sanya's life or Brahmachari life. Krishna is priority. Krishna Bhakti is priority. So we see that in the inhabitants of Vrindavan. They have a home, but the home is revolving around Krishna. They have a family, the family is revolving around Krishna. They have wealth, cows, that's the wealth of the Brajavasis, all around Krishna. So nothing is an impediment, nothing is an obstacle, but everything is helping them to absorb themselves more in Krishna consciousness. So first Brahma is saying that, no? I don't know how you will repay to the Brajavasis since they have given you everything they have. And then he says, Tavat raga dayastinas, tavat kara griham griham, tavat mohun grini gado, yavat krishna nate jana. He's saying basically, he presents a conclusion. And until and unless people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain like thieves. He says their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feeling for the family members remain foot shackles. Okay. So he's saying these things, like contrasting. Brajavasis giving everything with those who have all those things, but Krishna is not in the center. So he said, for that people, the house becomes a prison. So your house can be a prison or a temple. You choose. It's the same thing, the same structure, doors, bathroom, kitchen, the same house. So according to how you live in that house, it's a prison, you are in jail, or you are in a temple. You are beyond liberation even. They are the Brajavasis. They are beyond mukti, but they have homes and cows and so on. So this verse is very nice because Brahma is saying, if you can have, if your house can be a prison, your family attachments can be a thief, or your affection and feelings can be foot shackles, as long as you are not Krishna conscious. So he's not saying those things are wrong always. He's saying the wrong thing actually is not the house, the family. The wrong thing is to not be Krishna conscious. So when you don't have God in the center, everything becomes dangerous, basically. Everything becomes entanglement. House, car, family, feelings. Everything is fostering your attachment to this world. But when Krishna appears in the equation, everything takes another shape. Srila Prabhupada will say, all the things that you may speak about, money, possessions, house, family, without Krishna, like zero. 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 You can have 1 million zeros, still a zero. It's not the one, the more zeros I have, the more wealthy I am. It's the same. But he will say what?
Krishna
is number one. So you put number one, and the more zeros you had, the more wealthy you are now. You follow? So you are wealthy and have family and lots of that stuff, but Krishna in the center, Krishna in the equation, oh, suddenly all those zeros acquire so much value because of Krishna's being present. He's the one who's really given value to our life, purpose to our life. Artha. Artha in Sanskrit means wealth, value, purpose. So having love for Krishna is called Purushartha or Paramartha, the goal of life. Because he's the one who comes to give value and purpose to our existence. So this is a very nice verse by Sri Brahmaji, where he basically is saying this idea, no? I mean, without Krishna, this is always expressed in this way in Shastra. Ambayabhyatirekabhya. Directly and indirectly. The same point. What happens when you surrender to Krishna? What happens when you do not surrender to Krishna? And we generally need the two sides. Smarta vyasatatam vishnur, vishmarta vyona jatu. It's the same thing, but we need the two sides. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. It's the same, but we need the two sides of the coin, if you will. So we find this notion in Golok, this beautiful absorption of the Brajavasis, where every single aspect of their domestic life is a new opportunity to love Krishna. The Bhagavatam it says, Jatohani bahana nimatano palipa prinkhenkanarva ruditokshana marjanadu gayanti chai namanu raktha diyosru kantya dhanyabra istriya urukrama chitta jana. Very nice verse on the Bhagavad, which mentions basically, is describing the gopis. And how the gopis say, Jatohani bahana nimatano palipa prinkhenkanarva ruditokshana marjana. When they are cleaning their house, when they are feeding their babies, when they are splinking the ground with water, when they are cooking, with whatever they are doing, gayanti chainamano rakta diyoshrukantyo, they are absorbed in singing about Krishna to the point that their throats become choked. Gayanti chainamano rakta diyoshrukantyo dhanyabra striya urukrama chitta jana. They are so fortunate. So in this verse, we find a depiction of, again, daily, normal, ordinary activities. No? You are feeding baby, cleaning house, no? Sprinkling love with water, cooking stuff, playing, having recreation. And this verse of the Bhagavatam says, the gopis are taking all these situations to absorb themselves in Hari Kirtan. Gayanti chainam anurakta. They are anurakta gayanti. Gayanti means they are singing with anurakta, which means with anurag, with a deep attachment. They do not need again to be sannyasis, to be living in the temple, to be doing whatever tapasya or whatever. They're just cleaning the house. They're cooking whatever lunch. But for them, oh, this is such a great opportunity to absorb in Krishna Kirtan and remember Krishna. You follow? Because sometimes we may create an excuse ourselves. Oh no, I'm in family life, so entangled, I cannot serve Krishna. But actually you are creating an excuse to not do what you have to do there. You can do all those things. You see how the gopis are leading their family life. And they are doing the same things you are doing. They are working, cleaning, cooking, But all of those things for them is, oh, we can absorb in kirtan, we can absorb in smaran, we can remember our beloved and so on. So again, our goal, as I mentioned, is to enter that group. Gopis, gopas, to be grihasthas for eternity. So better we prepare now for that. So that's the notion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, similarly, he mentioned this in his in his Saranagati, his list of songs depicting the six stages of Saranagati. So the first stage of Saranagati is Anukulyasu Sankalpa, which means to make a firm vow of accepting all that is favorable for bhakti in Krishna's service. And in the songs that have to do with that stage, accepting that which is favorable, he starts to describe. Not mine, just in case. He starts to describe basically his house, the dynamics in his home. He starts to speak about what he will do in his house, how he will pick flowers, how he will cook for the deity, how his house is a temple, is not his house, how his wife is a Vaishnavi. He starts like to give a description of his daily family life as that which is favorable for Krishna's service. No? He's not saying, get rid of all that because that's unfavorable. It can be favorable or unfavorable according to, as they say in English, beauty lies in the eye of the beholder. No? So depending on the eyes you have, something is beautiful or not. So if you see through prema netra, through seva netra, bhava netra, the eye of love, the eye of service, beauty will be there. If you see through some other netra, through some other eyes, you may be in a horror movie. Yeah. I mean, Krishna consciousness means you have to, your consciousness is tied to Krishna. If your consciousness is somewhere else, no longer Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not about being in certain place or doing certain thing, but where are you internally? You can be always in Krishna consciousness, basically, no matter. That's the generosity of bhakti. No? Other processes are not as generous and as powerful as bhakti, like jnana, yoga. I mean, you study Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. He's not saying all the things we are saying here. Remain at home and while cooking, do this. He will say yama niyama to begin with. And part of that is what? Brahmacharya. He didn't even start with asana, pranayama, dhyana, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. Yama niyama. One of those things becomes celibate. If you say, oh my God, I live in grihastha life, you cannot practice this, sorry. Just the preliminary stages of the whole system do not allow for being a grihastha ashram. In Gyan of Shankara, Gyan Mark, similar. You have to practice Vivek, Vairagya. So you want to attain Mukti in Advaita Vedanta, you have to accept sannyas. You have to accept sannyas. There's no other possibility according to them. But in Bhakti, our ultimate goal is not to be sannyas. No, Vrindavan, Brajavasi, Gopat, Gopis, etc. So that's not speaking that our process is inferior, but actually that it's more powerful. So it's not requiring some prerequisite of purity and renunciation to the world. You can remain where you are, and bhakti comes to your life and spiritualizes everything. You don't need to change and go to the mountain, enter the cave or whatever. You can remain in your family and so on, but just add bhakti to the equation. You don't need to reject anything, but just to add again. The zeros may be there, just add the one, add the Krishna. One, if you will. So family life in that sense is interesting experience. It's an experience for sadhu sangha. If all the family are Vaishnavas, you're having sadhu sangha on a daily basis. Once I remember I was with a friend of mine and he was kind of complaining or something, lamenting, oh Maharaj, so many, he was living relatively far from the main ashram, monastic ashram. But he was living in his ashram, in his house. But he was like, oh, I have not seen the devotee for so long. I'm missing sadhu sangha. And I asked him, but you live with your wife here, right? Yes. And you have some children, you have three. And are they not sadhu sangha? Are they not Vaishnavas? This is not an ashram? Like, if you do not value that, probably you won't be able to value other things. Let's begin at home, if you will. So your family is sadhu sangha. Sometimes we take it for granted. That's the danger sometimes. Not, of course, familiarity breeds contempt, as they say. So you get accustomed to something which you shouldn't get accustomed to, because it remains extraordinary. Sadhu sangha is always extraordinary. Even if it comes through your wife, through your child, whatever, through your brother, sadhu sangha is sadhu sangha. That's not from this world. Even though it seems from this world, it seems it's here, but it's not from this world. Deities, prasad, sankirtan, shastra, they come to us from above, from other world to this world, but we should be very careful not to think, oh, they are from this world. We take that for granted. We are accustomed. So we take our daily experience for granted. Well, actually, it's still extraordinary. So we should be always try to keep focus on, I'm in a grihastha ashram, that's extraordinary. I'm in an ashram, again, that's shelter. So, and of course, just to share some concluding thoughts in case you have some questions, something you'd like to share or comment. Grihastha dharma or grihastha ashram, of course, as we mentioned, is in the context of paradharma. Sabai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktira dokshaye. Hai tu kriya pratihata jayatma suprasidati. So we want to engage in bhakti. So as I mentioned in the beginning, we accept grihastha ashram or whatever other ashram as much as long as it helps us to be functional as a bhakta. Grihastha ashram per se, without bhakti, grihastha dharma, without bhakti, is kaitav dharma, in the words of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Without bhakti, dharma, artha, kama, moksha are cheating religion. Bhagavatam starts there, strong statement. Dharma prayita kaitavo tra. Atra. In this book, dharma prayita kaitavo. All this cheating in the name of religion is rejected because bhakti is accepted as the real religion or function of the soul, if you will. So we accept grihastha ashram, those who make that choice, with the understanding this will help me, as we spoke today with Damodar Prabhu, this will help me to balance my humanity. I'm a human. We are humans, hopefully. So, I mean, we have to behave as such. To have the human vehicle is not enough. You have to behave as such. And we want to remain being humans. We don't want to do away with our humanity in the name of becoming transcendental and end up being hard-hearted or something. We want to enter Nara Lila of Bhagavan. Nara Lila is the highest Lila. Krishniraya Tekka Kila Sarvotama Nara Lila Narabapu Tanhara Sarup, says Krishna Dakavraj. Gopa Besh Venukar Navakishor Natavar Nara Lila Hai Anurup. This Nara Lila is the highest of all Lilas of Bhagavan. Well, he appears Gopa Besh, dressed as a Gopa, Venukar, flute in hand, Navakishor, eternal youth, Natavar, king of dancers, Nara Lila Hai Anurup. Oh, this Nara Lila is super. Superb, you say in English? Superb. So we want to enter Nara Lila, human-like pastimes. So for entering Nara Lila, we have to keep our humanity. We have to divinize, spiritualize our humanity. So we have to balance our humanity in the service of divinity. It's important. In the Bhagavatam, of course, it's saying, Kamasyan Indriya Priyan Labu Jivita Javata Jivasita Jignasa Nartu Jas Jiha Karma Vihi. No, we do not just engage your senses for the sake of enjoying your senses, but engage your senses for survival, keeping your soul and body together, and do that for tattva jignasa, for inquiring into reality, into the ultimate reality. So grihastha ashram is for that. I'm taking care of all things so I can properly be a functional bhakta, functional devotee. Once I remember I asked one friend of mine, he's a very nice family man. I don't want to limit him with those designations, but he behaves very nicely in that realm. And I asked him, look, why you are working? No, like joking with him, like some joking challenge. Why do you work? He said, well, I have to earn some money. And why do you want money? He said, well, I need to maintain my family. And he kind of say that as the last conclusion, like end of the dialogue. But I asked him, and why you are maintaining your family? And he was like, oh, there's another level of conversation here. And of course, we are trying to maintain our family in the context of giving pleasure to Krishna. That's for us the last reply, if you will. It's not just my family. Again, if you fall into that my family, that way we come back to the dark well of whatever, of family life. But family life can also be an enlightening shelter. So you have family life, but you have dark well, and brilliant enlightening shelter. You choose how to navigate your family life. Sometimes we may be a little bit in one of the other, but the idea is keep in mind, Grihastha ashram has the potential to always be an ashram. The shelter is there. The problem is when I leave the shelter. The shelter is always there waiting for me. So it's important that, okay, I choose to be a Grihastha, I choose to enter family life. I need that to balance my humanity. My Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktivedanta Tripurari Swami, he will say, if you want to develop yourself vertically, spiritually, to upwards, first you need to develop yourself horizontally. You need to be grounded as a human being on this world, with this body, with your mind, psychology, emotions. You need to be a whole person. Horizontal development, so you can develop yourself vertically. Do you follow my example? Or if you want to construct a temple in your heart, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say that, Mama Mandir, the ultimate temple is not so much something you can build with bricks outside. Not someone once told that to my Guru Maharaj also. I have a project of building a temple of, I don't know, $10 million and 108 floors or whatever. And my Guru Maharaj said, I actually have a more ambitious project in mind. Ambitious, you say?
Ambitious.
So this devotee was like, more ambitious than that? No, I thought this was the most ambitious. See, I had more ambitious project. Which is that project? I'm trying to build a temple in my heart, he said. That's more difficult. So if you want to build that temple, the foundation of the construction, if you will, it has to be this horizontal development. You have to be a functional human being on earth. And then you can start working on the first floor, second floor, if you will, of the temple. But if the foundation is not proper, no matter how nice the temple is upwards, it won't last. So it's important, this idea is important. We have to be okay materially so we can be okay spiritually, if you will. And we are not trying to practice Krishna consciousness to be okay. We are trying to be okay so we can practice Krishna consciousness. Being a good Grihastha is basically that. No? We have to address our humanity in the context of divinizing. Divinizing? I'm creating new words, sorry. Divinizing our humanity in Krishna's service. We should that idea came once. We shouldn't try to serve so we can feel something, but we have to try to feel something so we can serve. So feel something means to be balanced emotionally, to be satisfied on according to our present needs and situation. I mean, we have to be honest. We were speaking quite a lot today with Dhamara about that. Each of us have to be really authentic and sincere about which is my adhikar, which means how much I can do till now. What do I need to be? It doesn't mean you are being selfish. It means it's a healthy selfishness, if you will. You are trying to address your needs in a realistic way so you can be a more sustainable sadhaka practitioner. Because if not, you are making just a show of transcendence. Like, I don't need anything. I'll renounce to everything. I only care for whatever others want and Krishna wants, and let's see in time how the project goes, how much sustainable it is. Some of us may end in the madhouse or something in the name of transcendence. So we need to be balanced as humans. That's not the ultimate goal of life, but that's very important so we can be deep, mature devotees. It's like reaching the airport. No? I mean, reaching the airport is not the goal. But you cannot take the plane if you don't reach the airport first. So if you are not balanced as a human being, you cannot reach Golok Vrindavan eventually. Because you have to reach Golok Vrindavan with your humanity intact. I'm fully spiritualized. So you cannot do away with that, basically. So basically, in conclusion, the priority of the title of the talk was Priorities in Grihastha Ashram, but the priority in Grihastha Ashram, again, is the same priority that in any other ashram, which is bhakti. It's not that, okay, you as Grihasthas have other priorities. Of course, you have some things to attend that the sannyasi may not have to attend, but when we speak about priority, we share the same priority. We share the same ideal, common goal. No? And if bhakti is not our priority, as in the Grihastha Ashram, as much as bhakti is not your priority, an ashram stops being an ashram, stops being a shelter. If I'm a sannyasi, I'm official in the sannyas ashram, but bhakti stops being my priority, I'm no longer in an ashram. I'm in a dark well of a show of being a sannyasi or something like that. You follow? Because it's no longer facilitating our attainment of the goal. But the more we properly engage as grihasthas, as family members, the more we properly engage in the context of bhakti, the closer we get to the idea of family. I mean, we are in family life and we want to attain this universal family. This is this famous line in India, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. Basically means the whole world is one family. There's no more than one family, technically speaking. If you think in terms of two families, you start to be sectarian. Something like that. You have to live your own family life in such a way that it gets you closer and closer to the only one family that we want to attain, which is called Gokul. Gokul means family. So we want eternally to enter Gokul, that place which is the family of the go, of the cows, if you will. We become part of that. Magumras likes to say, if you want to go to Golok, the planet of the cows, you have to become like a cow. And the cows, what do? They take something that is not very important for us, like grass, and they transform it in something that is so important for us. Milk and all that you can do through that. And even when the cow dies naturally, it's offering their skin for making the mridanga heads, and two, you can glorify Hari through that. So the point is, the life of a cow is totally in the concept of giving. So you want to enter the planet of cows, you have to become cow-like. That means to enter Goloka or Gokul, the family. So we have to start in our family here. So someday we enter into that ultimate only one family. They're the family of Gokul. So some ideas I want to share today in the context of priorities in Grihastha life. I hope that's helpful. And we have some few minutes. If someone may have something to ask about, some comments or some doubts in this connection.
Bharat, thank you so much for this beautiful class. So many eye-openers, so many brilliant statements that you made. I can go on and on, Maharaj, but this was a very, very beautiful class. Thank you so much. One of the points that you mentioned, Maharaj, is when you're quoting about Brahma's verses, you said, Tavat Kara Graham. If the senses are thieves, then the same house, which should be a temple, instead becomes a prison. So one of the, I guess, early processes would be how do we control our senses? Because sometimes with devotees outside, you don't develop so much familiarity, but with the devotees at home, who are devotees, my wife and children are devotees, but I sometimes develop familiarity. And that sometimes leads to loose control over the senses. So how do we adjust that?
Well, in brief words, I will say, of course, the way to control our senses and therefore to control our mind is to engage the senses in Krishna's service. That's what sadhana bhakti is about. Kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhavasa sadhana vidha. Or Hrishikena Hrishikesa sevanam bhakti ruchate. One of the name of Krishna is Hrishikesa, which means basically your senses are to be offered to him because he's the lord of the senses, the owner of your senses. So in family life, of course, I understand that one can develop some familiarity with one's own children, and you start to see them like, I know them, they are my child. And you know the people in detail, so you may know all about the person. So it's very subtle, because you can think, no, I know that person. I know their frailties, their weaknesses, their ordinary side. So it's very important to also keep in, to take some inner distance, some to see the bigger picture. And that's why we always need some moment, hopefully in the day, for prayer, for sadhana, for taking our moment to recalibrate where we are, what's actually going on. Because again, we take for granted, if not, we start the day, we do this, oh, my family, my kids, and you just get carried by the motions of the day, and you lose sight of what's actually going on. So you think what's going on, you think you know, but you have lost sight of the extraordinariness of your children being devotees. So it's generally important to take some healthy distance and concentrate and meditate on what's actually going on. What's my house actually, an ashram? Who is my family actually? These are Vaishnavas that came to bless my life, and I have to develop a relationship of love with them, but also to serve them as Vaishnavas, to keep that above my head. And I need to remind myself of that maybe on a daily basis, because if not, I very quickly forget and I enter in more ordinary dealings, and that's not healthy, basically. We have to take care of how we relate among us as Vaishnavas, because we may take for granted very easily all the things. Bhakti is, again, so generous. It comes to our lives in a very, such a user-friendly way. But that has some danger, because we can very easily like, oh yeah, I'm accustomed. I take that for granted. The deities are there. Mridanga is there. Prasada is there. Wife is there. House is here. But all the things are actually, strictly speaking, the mercy of Krishna coming to our life in the form of all those things. So we should remain humble and conscious of that. And again, sadhana is for that. Sadhana means take a distance from something so you can really appreciate what that something is. Because if you have, for me, that's the idea of detachment. Detachment doesn't mean I reject something, if you will. But I take some distance from something so I can really understand what that something is. For example, if I have my hand here, it's so close to me, I cannot see it. It's too close. So I need to detach myself from my hand and put it at some distance, as much as I can. That's as long as my arm is. And now I can see my hand more specifically. I have taken a distance from the hand, so I can appreciate better what's that. If it's too close, I lose sight of that. To follow. So that's my idea of detachment. Take some distance from what is surrounding you on a daily basis, your family, your daily dynamics. A distance so you can see themselves from the bigger picture and appreciate what they actually are. And then return back to that with the proper attitude. And sometimes we need many times to do that on a daily basis. So it's important to try to become aware of that. And whenever we feel I'm getting carried away by these other things, try to take a minute, get detached, if you will, and get connected with the bigger picture. And then you can go back and see things as they are. Because we want things as they are, as we spoke yesterday. Prabhupada published Bhagavad Gita cities. But we want everything to be as it is, not only the Bhagavad Gita, but our daily life, our family life, as it is. Not as we think it is, but as it really is. So for really having proper perspective of everything, we sometimes need to take a distance, analyze that in the context of prayer and sadhana, and then get renewed vision to offer proper service. And on a daily basis, it's not just once a week, and that will keep myself aware the whole week. Sometimes we need to do it many times per day. But that's what makes our process really alive, substantial. So I hope that helps, Raman Prabhu. It's a short answer. Again, each of these questions can be a whole lecture. But what to do?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Namrasa Prabhu.
Yeah, you said that to attain the higher realm, we need to be balanced in this life and here and now. But we see devotees are like in our shastras and also like contemporary even devotees, that they seem that it's not very balanced, like very extreme in some ways. Like some, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or like, you know, devotees who are like, that we hear about who are perfect beings, they don't seem so balanced in this world. There's always something happening, maybe something that's imbalanced. Do you know kind of what I mean? In their life, it's a little bit...
For example, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in which sense?
Like, you know, he's a very, you know, chanted Harinam for 10 years mm-hmm. in the pod, mm-hmm. gave sannyas to himself, mm-hmm. and there's like, it's, you know, doesn't seem much balance, not him particularly, but doesn't seem so much balanced. Even devotees here, we see, like, there's such a spectrum of devotees that we see, and most of them we see are, like, kind of imbalanced, because it's, might seem... When you want to transcend, then you have to renounce things. And kind of like the old way of thinking of the beginning of ISKCON and how things were, you know, very imbalanced mm-hmm. in the way. So,
yeah, that's where I emphasize Bhaktivinoda Thakur today. Because right. you can, in him, I mean, I'm not saying he's better than Bhaktisiddhanta or anything, but there are different, like, examples and role models. And for every case, it will be different. And one will find more practical inspiration with one or the other. But in the context of Grihastha life, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he lived practically his entire life. Of course, it's a super example at the same time. We are not like Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
His schedule is like, you know, it's...
Yes, yes. So we cannot imitate that. I'm not saying from tomorrow on, wake up at this time and for this amount of time. And, yeah. But nonetheless, they remain an inspiration. And it's. I think it's nice to have those like reference role models, like of course they are super high and like superheroes, and we shouldn't try to imitate them because we may end up being dysfunctional, but we should derive inspiration from them, that's for sure. And on another level, if you will, it's important that we actually get inspiration from other devotees who may not be on that superhero level, but they are really exemplary, and an example that we can relate to on a more close way and follow, no? So and that's also available. It's not that they are not devotees like that. Maybe there may be not the majority, but we have to look for that association. And of course, we have to become that association ourselves. Of course, for that first we need to have some shelter, guide, and connection. But yeah, actually, our line, as I mentioned, is not renunciation. Mm-hmm. But the renunciation that comes in our path is the one that comes as a byproduct of bhakti. I mean, there is renunciation, but only as a byproduct, as a consequence of bhakti, not renunciation as a path unto itself. Well, this I spoke recently in the podcast with Jai Jagannath and monasticism, that the renunciation that we have is a byproduct of bhakti, not something we culture separately. No, Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta was not culturing renunciation separately. He was absorbed in bhakti, chanting 3 lakhs per day for 10 years. He was not renouncing. He was attached to Krishna so much, and that showed as a side effect in the other way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I understand your point, and I think it's important to get examples we can relate to.
Yeah.
Super examples also are there and remain an inspiration, but also we need to find some other examples that we may feel more close to our situation, and if we are sincere, Krishna will make the arrangement to send us those examples, so we can become an example. Because there's always commitment in that. It's not only I want people to inspire me; you have also to inspire others. I want people to be example for me. It's okay, but the commitment is you have to become example for others. So something like that. Mm-hmm. Example. That's famous, very nice bhajan of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Mind, body, family, words. All in the service of Nanda Kishore, basically. No? So, yeah, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a very nice example. As I mentioned to you yesterday, his autobiography, Svalikita Jivani, is very nice because he's writing his whole life before he was a Gaudiya Vaishnav in his lifetime. And through all the experiences he went through, which again is very interesting because it gives this human side to the supernatural personality of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that helps us to relate more to, oh, he went through this, oh, he went through that. Of course, we are not comparing with him, But nonetheless, it gives some hope, if you okay, we can do it also. Okay, so we can leave here. Already we have been speaking almost for a while. So thank you so much for your time. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Haribo.